Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Most of our hits have come from left field. We search for the strange sound, and we seem to have an ear for that kind of tune. Hey everybody, welcome to Rockin' the Suburbs. My name is Patrick Foster, and on behalf of my good friend, co-founder, and co-host Jim Linehan, I want to welcome you to this episode of our program. This episode is another installment in our Heroes of Rock series, which examines contributors to the far-reaching genre of rock. From pioneers to superstars, little-known artists to trailblazers, one thing unites these heroes. They had the rock inside them, and they found a way to let it out. Today, Herb Alpert and Jerry Moss. A&M Records was formed in late 1962 by trumpeter Herb Alpert, a songwriter and singer, and a Brooklyn College graduate and burgeoning record promoter named Jerry Moss, and they worked out of Alpert's garage in West Hollywood, California. The first choice for their label name was Carnival, under which they released two singles before discovering that another label had already taken the name. They came up with a new label name by taking the first letter of each of their last names, and A&M Records was born. From the outset, Moss was the company president and Alpert the vice president. They worked out of West Hollywood, California. Said Jerry Moss, "We had a desk, a piano stool, a couch, a coffee table, and two phone lines. And that for the two of us worked out very well because we could go over the songs on the piano and make phone calls to the distributors. We also had an answering service at the time, and I did all the billing." The label's first release was The Lonely Bull by Alpert and the Tijuana Brass, and it gave the label its first hit and funds to build their operation. At the time, Moss said, "People advised us against starting a record company with the Lonely Bull single, but we had faith in the sound and we didn't want to lease the master, so we went for broke." The single peaked at number 6 in the U.S. and was number 1 for 5 consecutive weeks in Australia. A&M's interest in quality pressings started with the Lonely Bull. At the time, mono albums were pressed on styrene and stereo albums on vinyl. Alpert insisted on vinyl for his mono album. It was an early example of the duo's desire to provide quality sound and original, interesting music. By 1964, A&M had released 5 albums and grossed about $500,000. 2 of the Tijuana Brass singles and 1 by the Baja Marimba Band appeared on the Billboard charts. The Lonely Bull album sold 125,000 copies during the year, and the Baja Marimba Band single, Coming in the Back Door, sold over 100,000. In April of 1965, A&M released Whipped Cream and Other Delights, the 4th album by Alpert and the Tijuana Brass, which found the band nearly abandoning its Mexican-themed music for mostly instrumental arrangements of popular songs. The album, which became a steady seller for decades, also featured one of the most recognizable and parodied album covers of all time, with a photo of model and artist Dolores Erickson seemingly covered in whipped cream. A&M moved into the old Charlie Chaplin Studios on La Brea Avenue in Los Angeles in 1966, which became legendary as the label's home base. They started operations there in November with 32 employees on the payroll. Earlier in the year, the label released 2 singles by Captain Beefheart and his Magic Band. One was a version of Bo Diddley's Diddy Wah Diddy that became a regional hit in Los Angeles, and the other was Moonchild, written by David Gates, later of the band Bread. Moss wasn't a fan of the demos the band cut for what would be their first album, Safe as Milk, and he passed on putting out the record. But their streak of adventurous signings didn't stop there, and the roster expanded quickly to include Burt Bacharach, Antonio Carlos Jobim, Sergio Mendez, and Brazil 66, The Carpenters, and Quincy Jones. Moss told an interviewer, quote, that not having an act at the Monterey Pop Festival really affected me. We had to be in that business if we were going to survive. He consequently made several scouting trips to England and signed Cat Stevens, Joe Cocker, Procol Harum, Humble Pie, Fairport Convention, and Free. The scope of artists now signed to A&M, easy listening, Brazilian jazz, folk, blues rock, among others, made it clear that A&M was never going to be a label tied to a single genre or idea. Its fiercely independent spirit was summed up by Moss thusly. Most of our hits have come from left field. We search for the strange sound, and we seem to have an ear for that kind of tune.
Trouver la porte, mais si tu dois partir, attends. Mais si tu dois partir, attends. Sinon, tu dois rester là. Par contre,
mais si tu dois partir, va-t'en. Mais si tu dois partir, va-t'en. Sinon, tu dois rester là.
Tu sais, j'aurai des cauchemars et aussi mauvaise conscience si je t'empêchais. Tu espères,
mais si tu dois partir, va-t'en. Mais si tu dois partir, va-t'en.
As the 70s dawned, Moss and Alpert's humble enterprise had grown to be a force capable of competing with the dominant major labels of the day, but they retained an independent spirit and vision. And the emergence of a brother-sister duo from California sent their independent to the big time. Led by drummer and vocalist Karen Carpenter and her keyboardist, songwriter brother Richard, the Carpenters' brand of melodic pop produced a record-breaking run of hit recordings. They became leading sellers in the soft rock, easy listening, and adult contemporary music genres. They were just one spoke in A&M's wheel of eclectic talent, but what a spoke they were.
Thank you. with you before the second show. Just the radio. Don't you remember you told me you loved me, baby? You said you'd be coming back this way again, baby. Baby, 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 oh baby, I love you, I really do.
By the middle of the decade, the roster included Joan Baez, Phil Ochs, Gene Clark, the Flying Burrito Brothers, Rita Coolidge, Gino Vannelli, Billy Preston, Steeler's Wheel, and Wes Montgomery, including jazz figures like Paul Desmond. They also developed a jazz wing under the Horizon Record Labels banner. One thing Alpert and Moss had determined by the end of the 70s is that rather than trying to build a genre in-house, they could let semi-independent entrepreneurs run their labels from under the A&M umbrella. A great example of this is how Miles Copeland and his businesses, specifically IRS Records, became part of the A&M story. Miles Copeland III was a British punk new wave scene fixture in the mid to late 70s. He'd run a talent agency, a booking venture, a string of scrappy UK punk labels, including Step Forward and Illegal Records. His younger brother Stuart played drums in a trio called The Police, which Miles managed. The Police's first album came out on A&M in 1978, built around the single Roxanne, a song Copeland later called a turning point in his life. Its success gave Copeland a real standing with A&M's leadership, and specifically with Jerry Moss. Copeland went to Moss with a concept for a new record label. In July 1978, A&M agreed to manufacture and distribute IRS Records output in the United States, with Copeland and Jay Boberg retaining ownership and creative control of the label. For Copeland, it solved the exact problem he'd hit with his earlier UK punk labels, distribution muscle. His pitch to the bands was straightforward. Sign with IRS and get access to national distribution, the chance to get in the big game, while still working with an independent company. That's how he landed acts like the Go-Go's and initially the Dead Kennedys. For A&M, it let them plug into the UK punk new wave scene and college radio, genres a jazz and MOR-rooted label wasn't naturally wired into, without having to build that infrastructure themselves. It was a low-risk way to extend A&M's reach into a scene that was growing fast in 1979. Moss also just seems to have liked betting on Copeland personally. He told Record World in 1980, "Miles is betting on himself, and I'll always bet on a guy who bets on himself." The arrangement wasn't unconditional. Copeland had committed to releasing Dead Kennedys through IRS A&M distribution, but Moss personally asked him not to. Not over the music, but because Alpert and Moss were close with the Kennedy family and found the band's name embarrassing by association. It's a rare example in the A&M story of Alpert and Moss's personal lives getting in the way of an independent, artist-focused label. IRS under A&M distribution built the label's foundational roster. REM's Murmur helped define college rock, and the Go-Go's Beauty and the Beat became the first number one album by an all-female rock band. They also had acts like the Buzzcocks, the Cramps, Wall of Voodoo, and Fine Young Cannibals. The relationship ended in 1985 when Copeland brokered a deal to switch IRS's distribution to MCA Records, though A&M retained rights to continue releasing the label's pre-1985 catalog, which is why a chunk of early IRS material still carries the A&M logo today.
The door was closed, there was a note. I couldn't be bothered.
A&M was bought by PolyGram Records for $500 million in 1989, and PolyGram sold it to Universal in 1998. During their heyday from the mid-60s to the late 1980s, A&M was arguably one of the two or three most important independent labels in American pop history. They became America's largest independent record company, which is a different kind of achievement than just having hits. It proved a label could compete with the majors on distribution and marketing muscle while staying owner-operated for nearly three decades. Very few labels in history moved as fluidly between easy-listening instrumentals, Brazilian bossa nova, British folk rock, jazz, arena rock, new wave, and glossy 80s pop as A&M did. Alpert always wanted A&M to feel different from the cold corporate labels he recorded for, something more personal, finding artists with something unique to say rather than chasing the beat of the week. That ethos is why A&M is often cited, alongside labels like Motown and Stax, as a case study in how an artist-friendly, founder-led label culture can produce outsized creative results, and why its sale and subsequent PolyGram friction became a famous cautionary tale about major label acquisitions swallowing indie culture. Close to 600 of A&M's original albums remained in print decades later, and the label's catalog continues to be a significant revenue engine for Universal Records today, a testament to how much durable commercial and cultural value was built during the independent era. For their vision and belief in the idea of a truly independent record label, their artist and quality-first approach, and their willingness to take a chance on any artist or genre that had something unique that could be nurtured without the pressure of hitting sales targets or radio play, Herb Albert and Jerry Moss are heroes of rock. Police's first album, Outlands D'Amour,